We got Eric. Good, good. Woo! Session one, VS Live. How's it going, everybody? All right, a little round of applause. I like that. Anyway, I'm from Seattle myself. Well, from Cleveland originally, but I've been here for 5 years. Usually when I talk to people from Seattle, they're like, woo! I'm like, all right, that's classic Seattle spirit. How many people are from Seattle? A few of you? Cool. If you're not from Seattle, we're going to jump right out of the slide deck. There's only one thing you need to do when you're in Seattle, which is you need to go to Monorail Espresso downtown. It's the best coffee in all of Seattle. It's simply fantastic. I found it 5 years ago. They make the best latte. It's cash only. It's right downtown on Pike Street by the H&M. So if you find the H&M, it's literally this big. So if there's one thing that you do when you're in Seattle, besides come to all my sessions at VS Live, if you find yourself downtown, Monorail Espresso, best coffee you'll ever drink, that's it. Now we can get into the session. I just had to get that PSA out of the way. And if you're from Seattle, hopefully you agree with me. If not, we can talk coffee afterwards. We're not here to talk about coffee, although we'll talk a little coffee. We're really here to talk about Xamarin and really enabling any C# or F# or even VB.NET developer to create purely native iOS, Android, Mac, and of course Windows applications. How many people just found out that Xamarin is free? Few people? All right, cool. It's been there for a few months, and that's great. I'm super excited that now everything's included in Visual Studio and everything's free. In this session, I'm going to show you how to build out traditional Xamarin applications, so purely native user interfaces across the different platforms, talk about sharing code, talk about the tooling, everything that you need to get started. So a lot of people just found out Xamarin's free. How many people are brand new to Xamarin, like haven't even installed it? Or cool, perfect. This is great. You're in the perfect session. You guys crushed it. I mean, there was a lot of good sessions. You guys gave up Laurent for me. Go see Laurent's other sessions. He's phenomenal, too. So I'm super excited to be here. I'm James Montemagno. I'm a principal PM on the Xamarin team here at Microsoft. Formerly, as of a month ago, Xamarin. And before that, I was a customer. So I've had 5 years of actual Xamarin development. I've shipped more than 70 applications across all the different app stores. And I just love it. Like, I found mobile. I used to write printer software, which is fun for a little bit. Okay, 4 years, fun. And I really think 4 years is like what you need on your resume on LinkedIn to call yourself a software development of pure printer software. A lot of marshalling going on to C++ world. But you know, I found C#. I fell in love with C#. And it's all I ever wanted to do. And then I found out like I could put C# like on an Android device and on an iPhone. Like, that blew my mind. And that's all I've been doing for the last 5 years. And I talk about it a lot. Like I said, I live here in this wonderful, beautiful, sunshiny city of Seattle, Washington. I love it. Fell in love with it 5 years ago when I went to a conference out here. So come to a conference in Seattle, you'll eventually move here. That's what I like to say. And trust me, it is sunshiny at least, you know, 20, 30 days out of the year. So that's Seattle. I love it. I did honestly move here for a job, I swear, but I just really talk about coffee all the time. And we have some phenomenal coffee here. Did anyone watch my webinar that I did for VS Live a little bit ago? Oh, you got to go watch. I did a whole demo on coffee. It was phenomenal. So there's that. And also, what I love about my job is that I'm just a developer. And every single thing that I do, every app I create, is all open source on my GitHub. So if I'm creating libraries, creating apps, shipping it to the store, it's all on my GitHub. You guys can find me anytime at my new fancy email that I handcrafted myself, mots@microsoft.com. They gave me a terrible alias, and I said, no, I'm creating my own alias. I'm doing what I want around these parts. I also have a very fancy blog, Mots Codes, and that is also my Twitter handle and GitHub page, James Montemagno. There's not too many James Montemagnos in the world, so if you Google me, you'll probably find me. Not my dad, who also has the same name, but he just deals with metals and fabrication. Very different. I didn't want to get into that business. I said, printer software, that's what I want to do. But I also do this awesome thing. I just started up about a month and a half ago. I do a weekly development podcast with my good friend, Frank Krueger, all just on different topics. So it's not just about Xamarin development, but a whole bunch of other stuff. It's called Merge Conflict. We spent a lot of money on that very fancy domain name. So I highly recommend you guys check it out if you like podcasts. They're pretty short, 30 to 40 minutes. I think you'll love it. So that's enough about me. I'm pretty great, especially in 8-bit form, but let's learn about some Xamarin stuff. And this used to just say Xamarin, your complete mobile solution. There used to be a lot less areas. Now, as part of Microsoft, we really have the complete mobile solution for any independent developer or any enterprise looking to go mobile. I'm focusing purely on the develop part today, which is really handcrafting those iOS, Android, and Windows applications and sharing our .NET, C# code across all the different platforms. But we know that it's more than just the develop part. We need to give you all the tools that you need to be successful. So that obviously means developing it and sharing code, but also means testing. And we can write tens of business unit tests with NUnit or XUnit to test our business logic. But we give you world-class tools to test the user interface for any iOS or Android application with the Xamarin Test Cloud. I do entire sessions on automated UI, which I simply love. And you write C# to automate your iOS and Android applications. And it could be an iOS or Android application written in any language, not just with Xamarin. So you say, tap this button, do this thing, and your app does it. And then you can test it in our test cloud on over 2,000 unique iOS and Android physical devices. And I've walked the glorious test cloud labs in Denmark, and they're astonishing. They're lovely. But of course, you want to build. Amanda talked a little bit about Visual Studio Team Services, VSTS. There's Android, iOS tooling, Xamarin tooling, Xamarin Test Cloud tooling built right in. In fact, just 2 days ago for a different demo I was doing, I was like, how long will it take me if I'm not using TFS to get this running? That was my goal. I'm like, I want to see how long. I have this in GitHub, and I want to put it on there. How long will it take me from committing code to sending it to Test Cloud to putting into Hockey App to distribute my apps with Visual Studio Team Services? And I had it running in under 20 minutes, which is pretty awesome. And then, of course, distributing. I just mentioned Hockey App, but Hockey App is a tool. It's a free tool from Microsoft that enables you to do two things. First is to take your iOS and Android application and get it into your testers or internal employees' hands in a matter of seconds. So when it's built in continuous integration, you can deploy it directly to Hockey App. You get an email that says install, done. You don't have to go to the App Store, you don't have to do anything like that. And then Hockey App provides an SDK to give your users a way to give you feedback that goes right into the portal and to get crash and usage statistics of any of your applications. So kind of really end-to-end, develop, test, build, and distribute. And they all work together seamlessly. Like I said, I'm going to focus on the develop part today and what it really takes to create cross-platform native apps. So let's talk about what native is. There's a lot of different ways to do cross-platform mobile development. And when people think of cross-platform, they get kind of a scared look sometimes because they think of the bad stereotypes that kind of cross-platform has. For the last 5 years, I've been building native apps with Xamarin. I've really boiled it down to three specific things that I really, really think set Xamarin and just native applications apart. Which is, like, first, I'm an Android user. I just love Android. A lot of people hate it, but I love it. I think it's crazy. I think it's all over the place, but you can do crazy things on it. You shouldn't, but you can. And I think crafting a beautiful user interface for each iOS, Android, and Windows device really really enables you to set your app apart in the App Store. There's a reason someone bought an iOS or Android device. You want your app to look and feel correct on each platform. You don't want it to kind of feel like an Android application or feel like an iOS application. You want it to be that platform's app. And when new things are coming out, like material design in Android, you want to take advantage of all those things in Android that really will take your app to the next level and really get those 5-star reviews. Of course, as developers, we want access to every single API that we possibly could get our hands onto. So if there's a new release of iOS, I want to be able to have access to it. If there's a new platform, I want access to it. And of course, my app just has to be super performant, and I want to get down to the bare metal of each platform. So that's what you want. But how do you get there? How do you create these applications? There's a few ways to do it. When I started mobile development 5 years ago, my boss came into my office and he said, James, we've got 2 months until CES. It's my first day on the job. And I said, cool, that's 2 months. He's like, we need an iOS, Android, and a Windows application. They gotta be native, they gotta be beautiful, go. And I said, okay, well, I've never built an iOS or Android application. And you know, Java, we can just lowercase a bunch of things. Like, I'll figure that out. And then I took a look at Objective-C. I'm like, oh, I have no idea what's going on here. And I was worried. I thought I was first going to have to go down this silo approach, which is building the app 3 specific times over and over again. I have to boot up Xcode with Objective-C or Swift to build an iOS app, and then Java inside of Android Studio, and then C# with Visual Studio to do my Windows application. And this approach, some developers take because they're like, I need a native application. I'm going to get a native app. But of course, in this scenario, you literally have three teams working in three different programming languages, three different tool sets, probably using different CI, different unit tests. And when you think across platform mobile development, it's not just about sharing the actual business logic of your application. It's about your test suite. It's about your CI services. You're everyone working together in one team to actually publish those apps at the same time. So if I fix a bug in one library, it should just update all my applications. In this approach, you get really expensive really fast, and you keep hiring more specialists, and you have all these PMs, and literally I've gone into companies where their Android team is just facing their iOS team, but no one is talking to each other. So it's like, I don't even know why you put them in the same room. It's crazy. So you think maybe, well, what if I just put all my code in like one magic bucket, and then I get apps? It's what my parents think I do for a living. They're like, apps. Like, that's what you do, son. Yep, that is correct. I type and apps. That's how they magically appear after 2 to 4 weeks of Apple approval time. And so you think you put all this code into this like app generator. I'll write some HTML, JavaScript. I'll get this cross-platform app. And this is where the bad stereotype often comes around a lot of these different write once, run anywhere frameworks that are out there. And there's a lot of different ones. Some are more native, and some are just a web browser often with kind of some native UI kind of mixed in. But the issue here is that you're never creating a purely native user interface. And you're always developing kind of against their API that they provide you, not the actual API of the platform. So if you want to go do something and it's not abstracted for you, you actually have to go write that code in one of the native languages. So you're not actually getting that benefit of writing everything in one language and actually sharing code across all the different platforms. And then since it often is just running in a browser, you're not going to get that pure native actual performance that we want. So that's where Xamarin is completely different. We essentially enable any .NET developer to create a shared logic layer for all of your applications. It's all of your business logic, your models, view models, RESTful service calls, SQL databases, Azure integrations. It's the things that are the same that don't care about the user interface. If I go make an HTTP request, why should it care if it's running on an iOS or Android device? It shouldn't. We let you build this shared backend, which is often 60, 70, or 80% of all your code in your application. Then we give you 100% API access for each platform and let you craft a native user interface inside of Visual Studio for iOS, Android, and of course Windows. So you're sharing a mass amount of code, getting purely native applications, and I'll talk about performance, and we compile down to just a native application, which is beautiful. So you can share a lot of code. My first application I ever wrote, I shared 70% of code across all the different platforms. And that 30% of code was the UI or any of the platform-specific codes that I wanted to integrate into my application. And these are some popular applications. I always like to point out, iCircuit was actually by my good friend Frank Krueger that I podcast with. I'm going to show another app that he actually built. It's called iCircuit. It's on every platform. It's a circuit simulator. He's a mechanical engineer by trade and now an app developer. And his application shares anywhere between 90 in the dark color, some 70 all the way to 90 on Windows Phone. So the dark colors there, the lighter color are the platform-specific code. And he's an iOS guy, so he always likes to add more iOS APIs like iCloud integration and things like that. But he has one layer of logic that's shared. So if he fixes it once, he just publishes new apps, and boom, it's good. It's good to go. And you can even share more if you don't, need all those native APIs. Maybe you're just doing CRUD operations and forms over data. You can share nearly almost up to 100% of code. So how that looks like if you're a Windows developer, is essentially think of it like this. For a long time, even me, I've had this .NET runtime, .NET framework. It's run somewhere on Windows. It's been great. You dot, and then boom, you do it. And like everything, it's great. It's a wonderful world that we live in. Found C#. I was like, this is all I ever want to do again. It's all I've ever been doing. And on top, what we can see is specific platform APIs. So if I want to go to a specific platform, maybe it's UWP, maybe it's ASP.NET, or maybe it's even if I have to support WPF, there's platform-specific APIs that sit on top of those platforms. And for a long time, .NET has just been here, specifically on top of Windows. And with .NET Core, this kind of .NET Core kind of takes you to Mac and Linux and Windows in that platform. But we've been doing it for a long time. We're all about cross-platform. So we said, hey, we'll take that .NET runtime that you guys have been doing, and we'll create an open source version of it called Mono, which is the Mono runtime, which lives on and we support it, we created. And we said, we're going to give you all of that .NET goodness that you can just run on an iOS or Android device. So all of your .NET code is shared. Super highly performant, it's amazing. Then what we're gonna do is take every single API inside of iOS and Android, we're gonna create C# bindings around all of them, and then add C# features. So things like UIKit, iBeacon, Core Graphics, all these amazing iOS libraries that Apple ships, you can access all of them in C# with async await, events, delegates, lambdas, things that we know and love as C# .NET developers. So even though it is an iOS API, it feels like a C# API because it's all in C#. It's not no stars or brackets or anything crazy. So I can use link. I can use all the things that we love. And of course, we do the same on Android. But you get all the Android namespaces up top. We also leverage all of Google Play services, the Android support libraries, literally anything in the Android or iOS ecosystem you can use in your applications. I said they're super highly performant and they're native applications. Think of it like this, we do a full ahead of time compilation on iOS to create a native ARM binary. So we take your C#, compile it down into IL, one more time into LLVM bytecode, which is a compiler and optimizer that we send it through, the LLVM compiler and optimizer, the same exact one that Objective-C or Swift applications go through to actually get you the native ARM binary. The difference there is that we ahead of time compile our mono runtime, and we have an advanced linker and optimizer for our mono. So you think .NET's huge, oh, my app's gonna be huge. Well, our mono runtime is like 2 to 3 megs, depending on how much .NET you're using. So that gets bundled into your application, fully ahead of time compiled, so you get all your garbage collection, everything like that handled for you. Same thing kind of on Android. We can actually leverage how Android applications work, where they're kind of like in a little VM a little bit, and we can run our mono runtime side by side the Dahlberger Art runtime, which is Google's runtime for Android. And then we can JNI across for any of the Android-specific calls. But what's beautiful about this is our mono runtime is really good. In fact, often it's faster than the Dahlberger Art runtime for the same compute. And you get there's tons of independent performance analysis. And ours gets always exactly on par with a Java or Objective-C application, and even sometimes better on the Java side, even closer to a C++ application, which is almost as fast as you could possibly get. So you're gonna get these beautiful, great applications that you just ship to the App Store. Just an APK file on Android and an IPA or app file on iOS, and you ship it up to the App Store, you ship it up to Google Play, to the Amazon Store, to your internal store, you put it in Intune, do whatever you want. It's your app, it's a native app, and your users just install it like any other application. In fact, you probably have Xamarin applications on your actual phone, and you just don't know, because why should you? It's just an app that you've downloaded. We've had great support for all of the different platforms. We've been shipping same-day support for iOS since iOS 5, which is a pretty great track record. Xamarin's been around for 5 years. And we actually just shipped our preview support for iOS 10. It's not out yet, and I'm sure we'll ship same-day support for that too, but we have a long preview. For Android, Google, as of recently, has been doing a better job of preview, so we've had near same-day support for Lollipop, Marshmallow, and we already have a plethora of different Nougat. Nougat. It's not our Nougat, but it's the Android Nougat, Android N. We have previews of that as well. But what's exciting to me is that it's more than just phones and tablets. I can go to any of the different platforms that Apple or Google support. So Android Wear, Apple TV, watchOS. In fact, I just talked about that iOS 10 preview. When we shipped iOS 10, it wasn't just iOS 10. We did iOS 10, macOS Sierra, tvOS 10 and watchOS 3. Their numbers are all over the place, but we shipped that preview all on the same day. So really you can take your C# .NET code anywhere you need to go, including any of the Amazon devices like Fire TV or the Fire Kindle devices. Now we have two great IDEs. I'm gonna be demoing everything from my Surface Book right here. And we support Visual Studio 2012 all the way to 2015. Highly recommend everyone use 2015 so you can take advantage of all that C# 6 goodness. And hopefully you come to my session at 8 a.m. on Thursday. It's a very early session. I'm gonna take an Uber real early for that one to get over here. All about writing awesome C# code. So you can just install it. You just install it pretty seamlessly. Now, if you're on a Mac or maybe you're in a split team where you have developers on a Mac, I don't know if they'll have this fancy rose gold Mac like me. I do love it. I got to pick it, so I'm like, I want the rose gold one. And this is just a very cheap MacBook. It's not the MacBook Pro, just a MacBook. And we have Xamarin Studio, which is a super awesome IDE for iOS, Android, and Mac development. It's powered by Roslyn for great IntelliSense, and it's built right in. And the same solution, same projects open in both IDEs. So if you grab my source code for the app that I'm going to be building today, you can open it in a Mac or PC, whatever you want to do. It's great. So truly anything that you can do in Objective-C, Swift, or Java, you can do it in C# and in Visual Studio with Xamarin. To the point, if you find a great like iOS or Android library that's maybe not been written in Xamarin and C#, you can just pull it in and create a C# binding around it. I was creating an application where I needed kind of like little cards that you could swipe left and right, kind of like a Tinder app. I was building it for like news articles. And I just found this great library on GitHub. I pulled down the Java jar file and had it in my Xamarin application in 5 minutes. Like, it was great. And you just create C# bindings around it, so we give you the same exact technology. Cool. There's a few things Amanda mentioned earlier. The Xamarin platform, so everything I'm going to show you today, is completely included in Visual Studio. So including Xamarin Studio, the IDE is included in Visual Studio, part of that. Including Community Edition, which is great. So if you're an independent developer or a small startup, you're at BizSpark, any of that, it's all included. The nice thing here is that as far as building in applications, the APIs that you get access to, any version, anything. There's no restrictions, there's no profit sharing, there's nothing like that. You build an app, it's yours, it's free, it's awesome. It's all I've ever wanted to say for the last 3 years that I've worked at Xamarin, and now I can do it, thanks Microsoft. And I love that because like when they bought us, they made it free, and then they made everything open source. And they included it in the Visual Studio installer. So if you haven't installed it, when you install 2015, you just check the Xamarin checkbox and you get it. I think even now it may be just part of fully installed of update 3, if you have an older update. Or you can go to xamarin.com/download, and it'll install a very specific Visual Studio installer, or on the Mac, all the Xamarin Studio stuff. It's a universal installer. Like I mentioned, and Amanda mentioned, Xamarin's completely open source. So not only is our Mono runtime, which is the original open source implementation of .NET, that's highly embeddable. Mono runs on everything, PS4, Xbox One. It powers a lot of Unity stuff. It runs, obviously, Linux, Mac, iOS, Android. It runs everywhere, and it runs amazing everywhere. That's open source. If you're creating some new embeddable thing or new game engine, you can shove Mono in there. And of course, iOS, Android, Xamarin Forms, all open source. So let's take a look at building an application, because I've talked enough. Cool. And what I want to do is kind of show you the setup. I'll talk about my setup, since a lot of people are new. Essentially, what I have here is Surface Book, just PC. And this is just clear PC, Visual Studio 2015 installed, nothing special there. This is anniversary update. I woke up one day, and it was there. It was a little scary. I was like, everything still works. And then I have a Mac. And I'm not going to actually have anything on the screen. The HDMI is not even plugged in. And to do iOS development, you have to have a Mac. You just have to have one. Apple has a lot of restrictions around it. And essentially, you can still write all of your C# code for iOS apps. But when you actually want to deploy it to a simulator, when you want to put it on a device or you want to ship it to the App Store, you have to do that on a Mac. It's just Apple restrictions, EULAs. It's not a technical limitation. It's an Apple legality. And it doesn't have to be a super fancy Mac. I've been going on Craigslist and on eBay, like old Mac minis are like $300 or something like that. As long as it can run the latest version, that's good. And all I have installed here is Xamarin and Xcode. Xcode is the build tools that Apple ships. And that's all I've installed here. That's all I've done. On a PC, though, you can do everything. So you can do all of your Android development, all of your Windows development. You can still build iOS libraries if you're building libraries that you want to share across different platforms, which is really nice. And of course, you can still open your iOS apps even if you're not connected. So I'll kind of walk you through the IDE. And when you install Visual Studio, it'll have installed this thing called the Visual Studio Emulators for Android. If not, you should look for this. Essentially, Google ships a lot of emulators. They're kind of not great. They have some really great ones, but they don't work very nice with Hyper-V because it has its own emulation with Intel Haxum, which is its own accelerated thing. So what Microsoft did is they built their own Android emulators, and they're built on Hyper-V, just like the Windows Phone ones were. And in fact, it looks exactly like the Windows Phone one, but it's running Android. And you just download and you run it, and it's great. So that's like the first thing that you're going to see here that I have. And what I did is very similar to what Amanda did this morning is I did file new project. People ask, like, where do you get started, James? File new project. That's where we all get started at one point. And inside of here, we have Xamarin. It's also, I see Android. Let me zoom in here. Every time I do that, I go, sound effects. We have cross-platform. I'll get to that in a second. But then we see I have iPad, iPhone, and these are specific templates just if I want to create an iOS application. There's tvOS, there's Apple Watch, and then there's cross-platform. So cross-platform is going to give you cross-platform template with a shared code project, either a portable class library or a shared code. We'll talk about that after I create some apps. And the native one is what I'm going to be showing, so building native applications. And the Xamarin Forms one is a cross-platform UI that Amanda showed this morning. I'm not going to get too big into Xamarin Forms because Nick is giving a whole session this afternoon, but I'll kind of talk to you about where and why you would use Xamarin Forms. So it's kind of where I would get started. Now, the application I wanted to build today is this application I just called Image Search. And what I wanted to do is I want to go off, and Microsoft has these really cool services, and I want to use a few of them today. Cognitive services. And cognitive services are great APIs. They do a whole bunch of things such as computer vision, face recognition, you can do speaker recognition, Bing search, you can create your own recommendation engine with machine learning. And then they have all these Bing search APIs. And I was scouring the internet for, I want to do image searching, and I tried to do it on Google, and it was like the most terrible API, and it was very, very expensive. And then the Bing image search was completely free. So it's pretty nice, because if you go in, you can look at the Bing API, and then I could say, let me search for an image, and I'll say, let's look for some cute monkeys. And it'll go, oh, cute animals, there's a bunch of monkeys. And there's like a preview, and there's some JSON. So I wanted to create an application that could maybe take this in. So what I did, oh my goodness, there's so much JSON. There we go. So what I did is I went to JSON2C#.com. This is where I start every new application. I find some RESTful service I want to hit. Then I generate some classes. This is a huge, huge file. I'm pretty sure I could have said one. But there it goes. It gives me a bunch of like output. Right, so that's like my C# classes, which is pretty awesome. Inside of there. So like I could just copy this in. So what I did is I'm like, here's the API that they're going to give me. There's no SDK for the Bing image search. So it's like, here's a RESTful service point. I'm going to give you these results. So this is what I did. JSON2C#.com. Awesome. So let's do this. So what I want to do is I created a new application. I just have iOS and Android. And we're going to take a look at the structure here. And what I did is, like every single application I've ever created in my life, I created a model folder, a view model folder, and some services inside of here. And I have a Bing search folder in here. So I have my image, I have an image search, a thumbnail. And this is just all of the JSON that's coming back. And I did my due diligence, and I renamed everything to properly case it. There's got to be a tool that does this for you somehow. But it takes a lot of time to go remap everything. But I just have this nice API. And what I decided was I don't really like this Bing image because it's so hefty in memory. What I did is I created my own image result that I want to process. So it's very lightweight. So it's like a thumbnail link, it's an image link, a file format, a title, and a context link. Because my app only really is going to care about that. So I'm going to go type something, I'm going to go pull it down from Bing, and I'm going to display it in the user interface, and this is what I want to use. And this is all inside of a portable class library. So it's all just shared code. There's no iOS or Android specific APIs, but there is .NET. And there's a bunch of NuGet packages installed inside of here, which is nice. So I have some other things I'm going to be showing, but I have JSON.NET, for instance. I have some plugins and some HTTP extensions. And I have .NET in here, so I can go in and I can just write some code if I needed to. So the code that I actually want to write out is I want to say, like, how am I going to go and access that? I want to show you that it's just pure .NET code that I'm writing. So I'm going to go into this image search view model. So essentially, this is the representation for my screen. And I'm going to go write some code. And we're going to make this bigger. I'll make it even bigger. If I'm not coding at 145% font, then I'm not doing it right. How's that? Back of the room? Good? Good. I can't go any, I literally cannot go any bigger. All right, cool. So what I did is I created this view model. Essentially, it's going to be the code behind for each one of my pages in iOS and Android. I'm going to start on Android, build out a screen, then I'm going to do it on iOS. So I just have this observable collection I actually created my own observable collection, so it only triggers one event when I add stuff, called an observable range collection. And it's going to be a bunch of images inside of there. I just new it up. I just have a getter. And it's public. And then I have a simple async task to say search for images and return true or false for me. Was it successful or not? And I've gone ahead and generated this this query right here. This is the query to the actual Bing API. So I'm using some C# strict 6 string interpolation to pass the query down right there. And then I just get the first 20. I put very, very strict safe search, especially if you're demoing apps and images. Be safe. So I don't want to get Microsoft legal. Now that I'm employed, I don't want to get fired in the first month. Let's not do that. And the only thing I have to do is set a header key here of my subscription key. So I went in, I registered for the Cognitive Services API key. So now I can say, you know what? I'm going to come in and I'm going to say using our good friend, new HTTP client. Let's just say HTTP client. So I can do REST calls, service calls, things like that. I'm going to say client.default request headers.add. And I'm going to add this header key in here. And then I need to get my values. So for this demo, I have my API keys hidden in this service keys directory, so no one else can see it. So that's not it. Service. Oh, cognitive services keys.bing search. Perfect. So there's my key. So I just need to pass the key around. So now what I can do is I can go off and I can query this. I can say, hey, var, let's get some JSON. And we'll say await, because we're going to do this asynchronously. So it's going to go off on a background task, come back to me. And I'll say client.get string async. And I'm going to pass it the URL. Done. And now what I can say is, all right, let me get my var items. And I'm going to say JSON convert dot deserialize object. And what's going to come back from this is this search result thing. So there's a search result, has a bunch of images inside of it, which are here, and it has a bunch of stuff in it. So that's what's going to come back. Search result. And I'm going to pass it the JSON. So essentially, when I deserialize that object, it's just taking the JSON, which we just saw, and converting it into my objects. And now we have this search result. But I don't want my search result. What I want is an observable collection of image results. So I'm going to use my good friend link, of course. And I'm going to say, all right, what was it? Images dot add range. And I'm going to say, all right, so items dot images dot select. And we'll say for each one of these, this is going to bug me. I'm just going to close that down. We'll select a new image result. And then we can come in and say context link is going to be I dot content. Is it content URL? Dot. The link will be the host page URL. The file format will equal I dot encoding format. I'll set the image link, which will be the actual content URL. There we go. And then the thumbnail link. And what I'm going to do here is I'm going to say i.thumbnail URL. That could be null sometimes. So if it is null, then I'll set it to the content URL. And then I'll set the title equal to i.name. Perfect. So now I've converted essentially that over. So just .NET code. Nothing iOS or Android. We may have written this a few thousand times in our lives. But I'm using async await, C# 5 and 6 features. I'm using JSON.NET, which is just pulled down. And then I'm just using HTTP client right there, which is great. And when this returns false, so do something false, that's good. Don't do anything. I'll do something here in the future, so that's good. Reminder for myself. That's better than nothing. That's kind of like doing nothing. Return false, you figure it out, right? So let's actually create an iOS or Android application. So this is all my shared code, all my models, everything coming in that's shared. This would obviously build out. Every single one of my screens would have a whole bunch of code behind it. So here's what I did. Is I went over and I have my Android and iOS application. And under references, we're going to see a lot of references inside of here. The one to bring attention to is mono.android. Mono.android is going to have all of the Android-specific namespaces, so any Android API that I need inside of there. And then this image search, that's the reference. So when I went and I said add reference, we said just reference the image search, portable class library. So all that code that I wrote was shared. And then I could go in, if I needed to bring in other assemblies, I could come down here and I could bring in any of the system stuff, system net, system HTTP, numeric, service model, transactions, Windows, any of the .NET APIs right into my Android project, which is cool. And I've done that quite a few. There's core, HTTP, and then there's a bunch of the NuGet. So there's the JSON.NET. Down here, I have a bunch of the Android support libraries. I had a conversation earlier at breakfast about how Android's a hot mess, and it totally is. But they kind of fixed it by adding all these support libraries that say, we're adding all these new features, but no one has a new version of Android. So we'll add it to these libraries so developers can add all these cool new features so all of their users can have access to it. So all the material design, recycler view, all this cool stuff. Animated vector drawables, it's great. So what I now have is, I'm going to drop this down so we can kind of get rid of all these references, is we have some properties, so assembly info, we have this Android manifest thing, we have some assets, so I could add fonts if I wanted custom fonts in there, or some embedded files, and resources. What's really important about a native Android application and a Xamarin native application is this resource file. It's all of my images, string resources, styles, and layouts for my applications. So anything I'm going to use in here, like all my icons, would come into my drawable folder. And there's all these different attributes that you put on for the density of the screen, or if it's in landscape, or in a different language, or a different version. So for instance, in the values folder, I have some colors, dimensions, integers, and strings, and these styles, and things will get overwritten if I'm on a newer version. So it's kind of like a way of constructing from top down. And then we have a layout. So layouts are really important. I fell in love with Android really early on because I could go in and say, I want to create this page of my application. This is going to be my main Android XML file, so it's an AXML file. And, oops, keep hitting not the Windows button. So when I double-click on that AXML file, it's going to open our Android Designer right inside of Visual Studio. So over here, I have all my tools and all my toolbox items. So here's all my Android widgets. So these are Android-specific widgets, everything that's included in there. It's right there. So if I need text fields, email, plain text, I can drag and drop it over. If I hit the source tab on the bottom, it's going to switch me over to the code behind for that designer file, which is Android XML. This is why I fell in love with it, because I was doing XAML forever. And then I saw Android XML, and I'm like, well, it looks just like XAML, but it looks a little bit different. And in fact, Google wanted you to know it's Android, so they put Android, 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 Android everywhere. So it's there. But it's just XML, which is great, because I could understand it. So I have Android widgets, and I could come in and say, oh, there's this linear layout. So it's going to stack things vertically. I have a toolbar, so I'm including another file in here. Then I have this main recycler view, which is like this nice collection view of images. I set that up ahead of time, because it takes some time. But let's add a few things in here. So I can say, oh, I'm going to add another stack layout, or linear layout. There we go. And I'm going to say Android, and I'll give it an ID, equals... at plus ID of main content. There we go. And then we'll say, hey, you know what I want you to do is I want you to go ahead and I'm going to copy some of these attributes and fill and then wrap content. So fill wide and then make it your height as small as possible. And then I'm going to add a few items in here. So I'm going to say Android orientation equals horizontal. There we go. So I'm going to shove some stuff inside of here. And the first thing I will do is I'm going to go ahead and include an edit text. So just a text box here. So again, I'm going to copy some attributes here. So I'll say, hey, make it, you know, pretty big. Or in fact, I can use the syntax of 0DP, and then I'll say Android layout weight equals 1, so kind of fill it. And I'm gonna give this an ID. So those IDs are kind of like X names in a way. So that's a way for me to grab it from the code behind later on. So I'll say app plus ID slash query. That sounds good. And what's nice about this is I could obviously switch back to my designer. And then this is gonna update. And we'll see my actual text layout there. And if I wanted to, I could go ahead and drag a button in here. So I'll drag a button in there. I don't have to write the Android XML if I don't want to. I'll just say button. And I could, of course, pull out my properties pane right here and pin it. And I get all the properties for that button. So if I wanted to, I could say, hey, you know, let's make it that height. That looks good. That looks good. And then button is the text. So let's make it get images. Perfect. Right? So it's just the designer. And then the code behind is what's referencing it there. Bless you. Now, I have this recycler view, and you're like, well, James, why isn't that rendering? Well, it's a custom control that comes part of the Android support libraries, and we're actually adding support for custom controls in the next version, so I'm very excited about that. So it'll actually render live, but essentially it's a big box anyways. We're going to put some items in it. And those items that I'm going to put in it are in another layout. So I have what's in there. I have this card view thing, and the best way to look at it is in the Android XML. So I want to use some material design, so I have some cards, and I have this image view and some text. So I'm going to put some images in there and some text in there. And you can stylize it. It's any Android XML. What's great about this, if you find Android XML online, or even if you have to port an app over, it's the same stuff that was coming over from a traditional Android application. So I've already built this here. So let's go now into our code behind. So every screen has some code behind associated with it. So I'm going to go ahead and open up this Android main activity. So this main activity inherits from this base activity. So we'll take a look at that really quick, which comes in as a toolbar. It knows how to set up the toolbar. Then it has this this layout resource that you can set. So assigning the main. So here I'm going off and I'm saying, hey, there's going to be this recycler view, an image adapter, and this search view model. It's coming from our shared code. We see the first thing I do here is return a layout resource. And of course, I'm using old school stuff. So let's just go ahead and do that. Oh, so much prettier. Perfect. All right. Just C# 6 that real quick. And then down here, all I have is a little bit of boilerplate code to set up that recycler view. I just did that ahead of time because it takes a little bit of time. You know, I'd probably set up in 5-10 minutes, but I fear we'll get to the core of it. So here's what I want to do is I go off and I first create my shared code, my image search view model. I have an image adapter here. This image adapter is what I created to essentially take that item that had that card view, and it will construct the item every time. So to go out and inflate it, and every single time I go and I have an image, it'll go, it'll set the title, and it'll download and display the image for me automatically. I'm using a library called Picasso. And every single time I update that list, it'll go ahead and update these for me. So that's all this is doing. And I give it a grid layout, and I say make it two squares across. Cool. Now all I got to do here is I'm going to say var query equals find view by ID, and it's going to be an edit text. I'm going to say resource.id.query, which is what I named it earlier. I'm going to say var button. It's a great name for a button. It'll be find view by ID, and I'll say button. Those are just the Android widgets, and I'll say resource.id.button1. That's what it calls it. If you just drag and drop it, it'll be button 1, button 2, button 3. So now I have to add a click event. So I'm inside my Android application. I want to say button.click. These are native properties. I'm going to say plus equals. I know this is an async method that I want to call. So I'm going to pass it a lambda of async sender args. Again, this is an Android click handler. I don't have to overwrite anything. I don't have to do anything special. It's just a click. And what I'm going to do in here first, I'm going to say button.enabled equals false. Just it's false right now. And then button.enabled equals true when it's done. And what I'll do is I will say await view model. So remember, that's my view model from my shared code. Search for images async. And I'm going to pass it to query. So query.text, and I could trim it if I wanted to. I could do any of my link or any string compilation stuff on it. And boom, then I go and I got my search results back and it's done. And if I wanted to, I could pop up a message and say toast.make text. And I'll say, we got stuff. We'll be able to see it, so that's good. And we'll say toast length.short. And we'll say dot show. So we're going to pop up a little Android dialog. And what we can say, this is going to return a bool. So I'll say var result equals, and I'll say if result else, let's go ahead and we did not get stuff. Perfect. So just some dialogues that I want to pop up. Perfect. Just some click handlers. The core logic of my application is on the view model, though. Just wrote a little bit of code here to actually set up the UI. So now I have my Android emulators. I spun this one up ahead of time. It's right here. If you have any phones plugged in, I actually have my Nexus 6 plugged in right here. It would show up in the list like it does. Or I have my Android device right here. So I can actually say, hey, let's start debugging. And what I can do is I can add breakpoints in here. I can add these breakpoints in here. It's going to compile up my Android application 100% right on my Mac, or on my PC, I mean, and then deploy right to my Android emulator. So I'll give it a few seconds. It's going to compile up anything, and if it has to download any NuGets or any other packages, it'll do that. It should be good to go, so we'll see here.
So if you have your phone plugged in, it'll deploy right to there?
Yeah, I'm going to do that next, actually. All you have to do for Android, Android's easy, iOS is hard. It's Apple stuff. For Android, all you got to do is, I'll show you guys where it's at, but you go into settings and you tap a button 8 times in your developer. So it's pretty great. That's how you turn on a developer mode.
And it's debugging over USB.
It's debugging over USB, yeah. What's really cool about Android, actually, is that you can debug over Wi-Fi. It just needs an IP address. Right. It's pretty magical. Yeah, and it's just using the same, how this works is it uses the same exact ADB, Android Debug Bridge, the same protocols if you're in Android Studio, stuff like that. It's a native app. So let's do cute monkey. I'm going to say get images. And here it's going to go back in. We get our result. We can see this is an Android app compat button that I laid down. It's going to go off. And I didn't put a spinner in here, but I have a result, which is true. That's good. And there's our monkeys. We got some cute, adorable monkeys all coming in. I don't have to download anything. I just use that one library, which is a NuGet package, and I get some adorable monkeys. Oh, adorable. We have a great zoo here, too, by the way. If you don't like monkeys, well, everyone loves cute kitty. Again, we're going to get some results, so we'll add these breakpoints off. You could debug your Android code. You could debug your iOS code. Uh-oh. It didn't refresh. That's good. Interesting. Debugging live. We did get stuff. That's good. Well, let's see what's going on. Always good to debug live. Image search. Ah, add range. Oh, there we go. I keep adding range. That's good. So that's good. I'm just adding to this list of adorable animals. Now I also have a replace range. That's what I should have used. But there we go. Makes all sense. It works as expected. Great. So I have these great little guys on here. That's cool. Let's do it on iOS really quick. It is a feature. It's a good feature. So here's iOS down here. And I'm not going to go and build an entire iOS, blah, 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 do this whole thing. I'm going to walk you through exactly what I did. I have all the same references that I had over there, all the same NuGet packages. The only thing I did different is I installed an iOS-specific image downloader and cacher for me. There's libraries that do this. You have to rewrite the logic. I have all the same references, and we have some resources such as artwork and launch storyboards, and we have this main storyboard. So native iOS applications are all built with iOS storyboard files. So a storyboard file is kind of like that Android XML file, but it's an entire overview of my application. So when I double tap on that, this is actually going and it's communicating with my Mac just over Wi-Fi here. And it's going and it's creating this designer for me. It's creating this experience that will tie into my toolbox. So let me pull out my toolbox here and my properties so we can take a look there. So the first time it spins up, it's spinning up like a new instance, so it takes a few seconds. Oh, sure. So the question is, can you sideload on iOS just like you did on Android? Absolutely. And when you want to put it on an iOS device, you have to create this thing called a provisioning profile. And we have documentation to do that. You essentially have to register your Mac to Apple to trust it. For Android, there's no like certificate or anything like that. You can just go.
So you still need a Mac.
Got to have the Mac. Yep. So the storyboard file, essentially, if I zoom out here, I've created the user interface. It's very similar to iOS. I have these navigation controllers. You can say I have two. I have a main navigation controller and then a main view controller here. And it is associated with some code in the code behind. I have a toolbox with all of my widgets. So if I wanted a switch, I could drag it out. I get guidelines here. We support everything that iOS applications use, so auto layout, constraint systems, everything like that. And it gives you this generic view because iOS applications can be run everywhere. Maybe it's on a phone, maybe it's on a tablet. And use these constraint systems. So if I tap on it once, you can actually zoom in, you can see what it's doing here. So you have these little guidelines that say, stay so far away from these corners and these items so when you rotate it moves with it, which is nice. So if I go and put this into an iPhone 5S view, here you can actually see it shrinks everything down and you can decide what you want. You're usually designed in this generic view, which is interesting. There's no XML or anything like that in the code behind. But what you can see is when I tapped on this text field, I named it text field query. So just like I have those IDs, it's creating those backing for me automatically. So this view controller has some code behind here, just like our Android one does. And we see the very first thing I'm doing is saying view model and saying grab that image search view model for my shared code. Then I have this view did load, and I have a collection view of items that I've created. So I'm just going to say, hey, button search, which is what I called it. In iOS, you don't have a click event. You have a touch up inside event. There's like 18 different touch events. But you can add the same stuff here. So you say async sender args. There we go. And then what you can do is you can say, hey, this looks good. And now I can say button search, which is my iOS widget. I can say enabled equals false, button search.enabled equals true. I also have a little spinner in there, so I have a little activity is loading. So a little spinner, I'll say start animating. And then I'll say activity is loading, stop animating. So there's just iOS calls. And then I'll say await view model dot search for images async. And I'll say dot text. There we go, and that's it. Now I could spice this up and I could add some iOS specific APIs. So maybe I wanted to come in and say, you know what, UIView.animate. So you can animate really easily in iOS. And what we can see is I have an animate and an animate async. So we asyncify that method. So I'll say, hey, over 1 second, let's go ahead and before it searches, let's say collection view.alpha equals zero. And that's it. We'll just do that. And I'm going to wait on that. It's going to go out and search. I've just asyncified it, so I'm animating it out. And then I can reverse it. So I'll say make it one. There we go. And then one thing I have to do here is I need to say collection view images dot reload data. There we go. That's it. So boom, there's my code. Now I can set my iOS project as my startup. There it is. That's cool. Inside of there. And then what we can see is I have this little green connection up top. And what this is doing is it's finding all the Macs on my network. And if you had Macs, it would all show up if I was on MS Open, but I'm just on my hotspot here for demo purposes. And it goes off over Bonjour, which is like the Apple service to detect my Mac, and I just pair it there. So one developer type thing. You can have multiple instances of Visual Studio pointing at it. It goes off and it looks to say, what is installed currently on my Mac? So what simulators are over there? So it finds all of my iOS simulators that are installed on my Mac, which is super nice. If I had a device plugged in to my Mac, it'll show up in Visual Studio. I hit deploy, it deploys right to my device that's plugged into my Mac. In the future, we've already announced that we're adding support for plugging an iOS device into your PC, and we'll remote the USB over there. It's going to be bananas. It's not out yet. But I'm just going to hit debug inside of here. So this is going to compile my C# locally. So I could just compile this locally. The only thing it has to do when it goes and talks to the Mac is actually compile up the package that's going to be running on my actual iOS device or simulator. That's the required bits of it. And of course, the simulator would be running on my Mac because all the simulators are here. And if everything goes as planned and the network wants to work with me today, we'll be able to show off our iOS simulator for Windows. which when you hit debug, just launches an iPhone simulator right here on your PC, which is mind-blowing. So it'll go off, it'll compile, and the first compile obviously takes a second or two. Build successful, goes into debug mode. There's our iPhone simulator running on a PC. There's my beautiful splash screen. This is a full iOS simulator as if it was just running on your Mac. It's quite amazing. So you can do, you know, finger presses. I can say search. So I just tap it with my finger. It's not an animal. I don't have to click on it. Just do it. It goes off, searches. It fades stuff out, fades stuff in. There's all my monkeys as I scroll through. And I'm simulating. I'm sending the touch events back. I can just type in it, and I can say cute kitty. I'll say search. It's going to fade out, fade back in. And I can scroll down to the bottom. And there's all of our cats that are coming in, which is pretty awesome. If I wanted to find something a little bit different, maybe myself. Oh, I'm pretty cute. Pretty cute. Oh, there's me. Pretty adorable. You can see me. That's Mike James. That's not me. So there we go. So I have all the same images coming in. And this is pretty amazing. I don't have to, like, my PC, it's just, like, this Mac is just sitting here looking pretty, and it is super pretty, which is cool. But it's there. So let's talk about how I shared that code really quick. I'm going to go in, and we're going to take a look. So built out an app, shared a bunch of code. I'd build out more screens, do a bunch of stuff. And how I shared code was I leveraged today a portable class library. Portable class libraries came about because .NET kind of ran everywhere. So what they did is they said, well, let's do this intersection between the different devices. So we'll say, what is common in .NET between these different devices? And we'll give you an API surface for that. And that includes Xamarin, iOS, and Android. And what more recently has come about with .NET Core and the .NET standard is that it's not this intersection. It's like this is an API contract. So, of course, Xamarin fully supports .NET standard. So I can add AutoMapper, or I could add JSON.NET's .NET standard library into my Xamarin applications. So that means you can write code that is shared with ASP.NET Core, .NET Core, and so much more without having to worry about the APIs that are there for you. So you have a portable, it's still a portable class library that targets .NET standard. It's a little confusing. If you want to go really in-depth in it, it's been my passion to try to figure out over the last 6 months. I figure that's about how long it takes to figure out .NET Core. I'm still learning every day. So we support that fully, which is great. We also share do these things called shared projects. They were introduced in Visual Studio 2013 a ways back. Essentially, it's like file linking. It's like, hey, I have some code and I want to share it. So I just do that. Those are supported as well. So kind of no matter how you want to share code, it's there for you. The advantage of a portable class library is that it's actually assembly that's generated for you, where shared projects are just files of code. So there's no assembly built. It's just bundled into your app. We, of course, support NuGet in both Xamarin Studio and Visual Studio, so you can pull down all the packages that you know and love. And we really try to simplify development, not only with the plugins or the NuGets that are available, so like JSON.NET, but also trying to take advantage of what's up in this thing right there. Like, what is going on up there as far as all the APIs on the platform? So we thought it was great that you can do things like deserialized JSON and like HTTP. Like, those are kind of their own cross-platform APIs. But the stuff inside of there, like battery, GPS, taking photos, these are things that are supported on each platform. But they have different APIs, because it's an iOS API, an Android API, and a Windows API. So we said, what if we didn't have to write all this code? And what if we could access those native APIs from our shared code, which would be cool? So for instance, I wanted to do text-to-speech. And maybe I want to do text-to-speech. I want to say, hello, speak world, inside of there. So I'd say, oh, AV speech synthesizer. And I should say that as my API. And I should say text-to-speech. AV speech synthesizer and speech synthesizer. So that's why we created plugins for Xamarin and Windows. It's a whole open source project built by Xamarin's and by the community to write everything against a common API to access those actual native APIs. And what I thought would be cool is in the final version of this application that I have on my GitHub, you can find all this on my GitHub page, is I had it so you could tap on any of those images and do facial recognition. Like, that'd be kind of cool. Like, oh, there's inside that emotion API, inside these APIs, there's an emotion API, which is pretty sweet inside of cognitive services. And what you can do is you can have a photo and you can say, hey, like analyze this photo. And it'll tell you like the happiness level or some other emotions that are going on for these people. Like this person has a little bit of fear, a little disgusted, you know, things like that. This guy's super happy. So that would be fun to kind of show you like, well, you know, I can write a bunch of code inside of my .NET logic, but how do I do a little bit more? So what I wanted to do is install some NuGets and install some plugins. So I'm going to go out and I'm going to install the text-to-speech plugin. I still have, 15 minutes, so we're good, right? And here's a text-to-speech plugin, and let's really dive into the details here. You can adjust pitch, you can speak back stuff. It's built by this gentleman. Seems trustworthy. It's got a good name. But, you know, let's go a little bit deeper. Let's check out the project URL and open this up. And you can say, oh, here's James. We'll look at him. Adorable. I like that. It looks like he commits a lot of code, and he's got a lot of followers, hopefully a lot more after today. Oh, he actually works at Xamarin. That's cool. Now let's go into the text-to-speech plugin. So this is a plugin I wrote. It's its own repository now. So you can go in, and it tells you exactly how to use it, what platforms it supports, all the features it does, and this is the API. So it's crosstexttospeech.current.speak. That's cool, and you can give it overrides and things like that. Now, what's important here is that what I've done is I didn't magically create a .NET API that works on iOS and Android to do speech. What I did is I went down and I actually wrote the Android and iOS code. I created an abstraction, just an interface. Right? In it, I have a speak, I have enumerate, get install languages. And then what I did is I went into Android, iOS, and Windows, and all the different platforms, and I wrote all the code. So what happens is when I call the API, it uses like an internal singleton to create the Android or iOS version for me. I don't have to care because I'm just consuming it in my application. But it writes and does all this code, so I don't have to go do it, which is cool. So let's bring in this API really quick. I'm just going to install this. And I've also installed another one, because what I want to do is I want to take a photo of my face, and then what I want to do is I want to analyze that, and then I want to pop up a box that will tell me how happy I am, and I want to speak it back. We're going to do all that in a few lines of code. I'm going to do it here on Android. I'm going to deploy it to my Android device. So it's going to install this plugin. Oh, it's mad at me. I don't know what it's mad at. Interesting. NuGet. All right. And then it installs. Perfect. Classic NuGet. Am I right? All right, cool. So I'm going to go to installed, and I'll see what else I have installed in here. So I have installed not only that text-to-speech, but I've installed Project Oxford. You might have been, somebody saw that in the references. What is that? It's a cross-platform API for doing all that cognitive service stuff for the emotion engine. So here's the emotion API. I also have a permissions plugin. I have a geolocator. I have a media plugin to take a photo. I have a whole bunch of stuff in here. I have the text-to-speech plugin. So let's go into our shared code, and that's what's important here. I'm going to go into, and the first thing I'm going to see is I have an emotion service. So I wrote this code ahead of time, and what it does, it gets the happiness level via this emotion service. So I pass it my API key, I go off and I say recognize async, and it returns a result for me, which is an array of emotion. And then I parse it down here. So I go off and I say, let me find my happiness level and the result and get my average happiness level for the amount of people in the photo. That's it. And then I have a very simple method, just a static string that goes and takes that float and gives a smiley face or frowny face. And I can change that to super happy or super sad. Cool. And that'll be what's spoken back, essentially, maybe 10%, happy, whatever. And it does some multiplication. So what I want to do over here in my view model is I wrote a method. I did this ahead of time. I cheated. Because I knew I was going to run out of time, and say, take photo and analyze async. And I'm using as a cross-platform media plugin to say, take a photo async from my camera, save it to my album so I can relive the memories of my face, my selfies. And if I don't want to use the camera, let me just pick the photo async. And then what happens is it goes down, it analyzes it, and then I'm using another plugin to pop up a dialog box, all cross-platform, right, inside of here. And I'll do one more thing. I'll say, you know what? Before I pop up the dialog box, let me paste that cross-text-to-speech. Let me bring in that API, and I'll do the result. So I'm just using a bunch of plugins, taking a photo, doing text-to-speech, popping up a dialog box, all cross-platform, and analyzing entire photo stream. So you can see all I'm doing in here to get this happiness level is the file that's returned. I get the stream, sends it up, pulls it back down. So let's do something really quick. Let's head back over to Android, and I'll do it over here. I'm going to say Android. I'm going to go into my resources again, my main here. And let's go into our toolbox, drag another button down. Perfect button. We'll leave it at button. When I click that button, I'm going to call that method. So I'm going to go into my code behind here. And what I'll do is I'll copy and paste some of this stuff here. Button 2, great name for a button. Button 2. And this is an async API. So I can now say, view model dot take photo and analyze async. And it's going to use the camera true by default. I'm going to wait on that. And just for good measure, so I can't go out and do stuff, dot enabled equals true equals false. Oops. Reverse. There we go. Cool. So I just did that really quick. Now, for the camera stuff, I'm going to do this on a device right here. And I'm going to use an application called Visor, which is an application that will allow me to show you guys my screen. And then from this list here, I'm just going to go ahead and deploy it right here onto my Nexus 6 device. There we go. And all I did to put it in developer mode to do this is I went into settings, I went to about phone, went to build number, and you just tap that a bunch of time. And you can say I'm already a developer. You just tap that, and then you can deploy to a device seamlessly. So it's going to build this up, and it's going to deploy it to my my Nexus 6 here. Let's give it a second. And what this is literally doing is creating the same APK that you would upload to the App Store, and you would re-sign it, and then just put it on Google Play like anything else. So it's going to start a whole debug session here. There we go. And I have that beautiful button, amply named button, so we're going to click it. And there we go. You can see here, so it's live. There's obviously a little pixely coming up, but it's real live. I'm going to go ahead and say, let's flip it. Whoa, there's me. Let's do a straight face. So now it's going to go off. It's going to analyze it.
0.01% super sad.
That's no good. Now I'll do it again.
Super happy,
I like that. But that's the cool part is like I just wrote that code. I could run it on iOS, I could run the simulator, I could do all this stuff, and it would just work. If you download the source code, it's called Cognitive, or Image Cogs on my GitHub. You can grab all the source code, run it, it's fully finished, and grab all the source code. But I wanted to show you that you could leverage this. And now it's only on iOS or Android, but notice that this portable class library actually can target ASP.NET Core, .NET 4.5, Windows 8, 10. You can add that on there, and you can then leverage it on those different platforms. Cool. That stuff's pretty amazing. It's pretty mind-blowing. Just a few lines of code. So we did some plugins, and I want to talk to you about kind of the full developer experience that we offer now that we're part of Microsoft. First thing is that I built out these applications with traditional iOS, Android user interfaces, and I would do the same in XAML for Windows 10. And that's really amazing because I'm learning the core APIs of each platform, leveraging plugins in my shared code. And I could do anything that you could do in Java or Objective-C. But a lot of developers said, you know what I want to do is my applications are maybe not that complex. Or maybe I'm doing forms over data. I'm building a conference application like the Xamarin Evolve conference app that I built, all in Xamarin Forms. And I wanted one user interface that's all in XAML, but it's still native under the hood. So that's what we created. It takes that traditional Xamarin approach and adds in a shared UI layer to actually share more code. But you can still get down to the native APIs using plugins, using a dependency service that's built in. And it's this huge framework of not just UI that you build in XAML or C#, but also has two-way data binding built in, a navigation API, an animation API, a dependency service, and a messaging center. Kind of all the MVVM framework stuff that you need. It has its own MVVM framework built in, which is really great. So if you're looking to get off the ground running, it's really awesome for that. But it is an abstraction of common UI elements. So it's not going to be every single thing. I mean, you can still do a lot with it. So if you're building a login page, for instance, you'd have something like a tabbed page. You'd have a stack layout, which is kind of like that linear layout I showed earlier. I have some entries, and I have some text bindings to username and password, and then I have a button that has a command to the login command. And it's very typical MVVM, so I have a view model that implements iNotify property change. It has I commands, so when someone taps that button, it calls that method in the code behind, so I don't have to implement a click handler. And then I have another content page, which would be settings below. But what's great about this is that you're getting the native look and feel of each platform. So you get tabs on the bottom on iOS with icons, material tabs on Android, and like a pivot type control on Windows. And it's a Windows 10 application too, and we support all versions of Windows phone and desktop type tablets, not WPF, but like a Windows 10 UWP app, and that can be run on HoloLens, desktop, phone, doesn't matter. That's really great. We really integrate. And if you want to learn more about Xamarin Forms, later today, Nick Landry is doing a talk on Xamarin Forms. So that's why I'm not diving into that stuff here, but I want to tell you about it. It's really powerful. If you download the Xamarin Evolve app on your phone, any platform, you can. It's a real application. It shares 95% of code. So if you want to have yet another conference app installed on there. But we always like to say, like for me, it's important is when I started, I was one developer designing, developing, integrating, shipping, and everything, deploying. And it was terrible. Don't ever just have one developer to do all that. I mean, unless you hate that developer. Or you're a one-man shop, and that's okay. Because then you did it to yourself. But, you know, it's hard. You know, cross-platform mobile development in general is hard. So we want to give you the tools to make it easier. So every time you commit code to GitHub, it should build that application, do automated tests on it, and then deploy it. So I talked about the testing part with Xamarin Test Cloud. The actual test cloud part of testing it on real devices is actually a paid product, but you can actually write UI tests and run them on your local device or emulator or simulator completely for free, which is very nice. So you can actually run in a regression suite with every code push or every time you do it. And then obviously building. It's built right into Visual Studio Team Services, and there's just a Xamarin Android, Xamarin iOS build step. And there's actually a deploy to Hockey app step that will deploy out to Hockey app and give you all that metric and analytics, so kind of all the tools down the tool chain, everything you need that's in there. A good example of an application that I actually got to help build, build this year, was the My Driving application. It's on iOS, Android, and Windows 10. And Amanda Silver actually got to show it off in the video of it too. She helped PM it. When you go to azure.com/mydriving, they gave us a very nice URL, and I appreciate that, Azure. And it essentially turns your car into a smart car. What we wanted to do is say, listen, not everyone has a Tesla with all these fancy widgets, but every car has an OBD sensor, so an onboard metric that you can have. So the OBD device you can shove in there, and over Bluetooth or Wi-Fi, you can connect it to your mobile phone. And your iOS, Android, or Windows app would connect to that. It would read all your car's sensor data. And what was cool about this is we said, how many Azure services could we use? And we used about 1%. Pretty good. And we try to use as many as we can. So as you are streaming in all of these points, as you're driving around and reading all the sensor data, what would happen is it would go in, it would perform machine learning on it, and it would say, how good of a driver are you? And it would do all this number crunching. But as a developer, when I was developing it, every time I committed code, it would go out, it would build it up in VSTS, it would then distribute it to Hockey app, and I'd get test reports back from Test Cloud. So I'll show you what that looks like, because it was all on GitHub, actually. It's completely open source. So I wanted to show you a fully native Xamarin app. You can grab this today. There's like a 120-page document on it. It's crazy. But here's the GitHub repo, and all of our 2,000 commits are in here. And what we did is we had it in VSTS. So here's my driving. And we have this dashboard, and we can see the build status that's coming in, the Hockey app deployments. And every time I committed to GitHub, it would go out and it would build up the application. So we can see the build status actually failed recently on Android. So we can take a look at Android. And here's some builds of Master. It would go out, it would give us all the build results back. And if there was any tests that were run on it, it would come back too. And this was very easy. All you do is you come up, we have some custom scripts in the edit here that would go and push it here. So we update some version numbers, build the application, send it to Test Cloud, and then it would be pushed off to Hockey app. So what's cool about this, I'm gonna go over by 1 minute, is if I go into Test Cloud, if I log in over my hotspot, we can see that every single time I committed, it would push it to Test Cloud, and this application would run on iOS and Android, and it would run about 12 different UI tests on 20 different devices. So there's the app size, the peak memory usage. And what's cool is I could make sure that, hey, recording a trip should never fail. So this test, which was tapping buttons, doing some things, was run every single time on all of these devices. So I could go in, get different memory usage and CPU usage. So if I run this application, what we could see is I could go in, I'm simulating a trip here, so I could start recording. If I was actually in a car with one of these OBD sensors, it would read it. I'm going to use the simulator here. I have the same thing here on Android, but I get the actual flyout navigation, and here we are, literally, on campus. I'm going to stop recording a trip. It's going to send it all the way up to Azure right now, give me some statistics back. I'm going to go out, load trips, literally, in the future, 3 seconds from now. This trip came out. It pulls it down from Azure, all synchronized between. We'll see how fast it's going to be on my hotspot. Should be. We can go out 20 seconds ago. I'm hoping that they left our Azure instance there. But it's going to pull it all down and then do machine learning on it. So there it is. And all the machine learning. We'll see why it's upset at us. But 1 minute over. But you're getting a fully native, beautiful app actually doing all of this stuff, and it's all open source. So if you want to see like truly what you can do with Xamarin, take a look with that. It looks like some Wi-Fi issue. That's OK. Cool. So really, to bring it full circle and get you guys out of here to the next session, go back to my sides and say thank you. If you have any questions, I'll be around.